Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Rowing Chat. Today, I'm joined by Gwyn Batten. And first, we're going to have a brief word from our sponsors. As you all know, we are only live and on air because we have sponsorship and advertisers who are kind enough to support us. And also, you, our wonderful, loyal listener, we love it when you come and join us. We're particularly seeing good feedback from doing these shows live into Facebook. So thank you if you're watching live, and thank you if you're watching live on YouTube. If you have a comment during this show, please just type it and I will endeavor to splice it into my discussion. And if you have a question for Gwyn during our chat, please type that up too and we'll bring that on. But now our lovely sponsors. Firstly, you're going to hear me say this for the next month or so on the show. We're doing a survey of our listeners, and we'd very much like you to participate. It'll help us learn more about you, no matter whether you've been a listener since the beginning or this is the very first time you've tuned in. Please take a few minutes, visit our website. It's rowing.chat. And if you scroll to the bottom of the homepage, there's a banner that says listener survey. Click that. Have a nice glass or cup of something that you enjoy drinking and get on with taking our survey. And we really appreciate it. You are really helping us. Now, secondly, as a man, do you find it hard to get a dress shirt that actually fits your rowing body? Rowing Chat is introducing William Marnie, their specialist shirt makers for athletes. You can get started with an exclusive 10% discount coupon, which is rowingchat10. You can follow the link in the show notes or go to rowing.chat/sponsors to find out more. So for yourself or the man in your life, go and have a look at the William Marnie shirt range. And now I'm delighted to welcome back to Rowing Chat, Gwyn Batten.
Great. It's great to be back.
Yeah, it's been a little while. We had a chat a while back, and you very kindly introduced us to a few other people who have also guested on the show. But for people who don't know you, can you tell the listeners a little bit about you and your background in rowing?
Great. So, yeah, so I first really discovered rowing when I was 19 at university, as so many women did across the world, and went down a route of being not particularly good, taking 3 years to win my novice pot, which is a race for people have never won a race that we used to have in the UK. So I was pretty much a slow starter. But really, I went on and became an exercise physiologist first. So worked with our rowing team, worked with Jürgen Grobler and the team going into the 96 Olympics. And then about 18 months before that, I started to get quite quick in my single and went to the 96 games as a single sculler and came fifth in some of the most epic racing that there was in Atlanta in the singles. And then progressed on to race in Sydney, 2000 Olympics, and win Great Britain's first ever women's Olympic medal, which was the beginning of an era of silvers for Great Britain before it was finally claimed gold in 2012. So a really part of women's British women's rowing evolution as we stood on the shoulders of giants and went forward. So really happy to have done my bit. And I pretty much fell out of rowing as I came to the end of a 10-year international period of time. I needed to get a career up and running. And it was, I went into outrigger canoeing, which was all about being on the ocean and the waves, and it was so exciting. And I really thought about, well, how can we do that? How can we do that in rowing? How can we have that level of excitement? And I knew that there were people around the world doing it in certain boat craft. And it wasn't until on the World Rowing Athletes Commission, I was the athlete representative to the first ever World Coastal Championships in Cannes. Took one look at those boats and thought, oh my God, I have to get in one of those. And as you know, pretty much 10 years later, 12 years later, I'm sitting in the political driving seat and having also gone out and raced twice at World Championships and won at the World Championships, One in very violent conditions in Plymouth, which were amazing, really exciting. And then in very, very flat conditions at a world at the World Championships in Turkey. So been there, done it. And it really capped it off, I guess, in 2016, skippering what was a world record and world first boat going across the North Atlantic from New York to Falmouth in 49 days. So ocean rowing. So I've had everything really from Olympics through to ocean rowing. So, and ocean rowing is very much like rowing your caravan. You've got all of your provisions in there, you've got all of your bedding and enough safety provision on that boat that a full-size yacht has. How you cram it in, we had to sleep our we had to eat our way into our cabins in the first week of leaving New York. So absolutely, loads of rowing, loads of stuff. And what I do at the moment is I do what I call raid rowing. And we go, we take a one of the FISA class boats, and we do some really, go around some really sharp bits of headlands. Last year we did the Toes of Ireland and went round Fastnet, Mizzenhead, which we didn't go round Fastnet in the end, but Mizzenhead, some of the really, really big heads that jut out into the Atlantic. And we really enjoy that. And I guess from a administrative side, from a volunteer side, I'm on council for FISA, and I'm chair of the committee that look after coastal rowing. I'm chair of the Women's Eights Head of the River, and also was the first woman to be on the Henley Royal Regatta Management Committee for the first time in 175 years. The fantastic news is I've been joined by Sarah Winkler, so we are now two women on our committee. We've doubled ourselves just recently. She's a fantastic committee member and will do a great thing for the sport. That's the summary so far.
There we go. How exciting. And what a nice journey to hear about that. Firstly, you've tried so many different things. And secondly, that you're clearly still enjoying them.
It's just lovely. I mean, what I love about the sport when I first joined was the extreme and the purity and the fitness, and everything was, it was like Formula One. And as I've gradually experienced that world, what I really like now is the chaos and the ability to adapt. And, you know, when you go from, you know, huge waves and you're still trying to race in huge waves and the other people are in the same situation as you, it's just so different. It's purity to chaos. And I love that.
You need to meet Ben Booth. If you haven't met him, he's in the northeast of the US, and he writes the most marvelous blog in fabulously descriptive language of the beautiful challenges that he sees in rowing on the sea. And he has a stunning article, which I will send to you and share in the
Absolutely.
Show notes.
I do follow some of his videos. He is a real advocate of coastal, and it's great to have him out there shouting.
He's going to be on this show next week. Next month, sorry.
Yeah. I will listen in intently.
Now, I'd like to roll back a little bit and talk about all the different ways that people can get involved with rowing on the sea, because sea rowing isn't new, of course, but it is new to international competition. Tell us what's happening.
Yeah, so if you can imagine, rowing on the sea in all its shapes and forms was primarily a commercial function, whether or not it was transporting lighters, so you were taking stuff off big ships and bring them in, whether you were piloting, taking pilots out to ships to bring them in to Cornish coastlines, whether or not you were out in Ireland, whether or not you were trying to bring in the sardines. So everywhere around the world, you have specific boats that were designed for occupations, sea occupations, and quite often speed was really important. And of course, during downtime, these boats would be raced. Now, some of these boat designs are still there, and they're racing in very, very competitive racing all over the world, absolutely from Samoa to the Basque Country to Baltic, you know. You even got them racing in New Jersey with the lifeguards. You've got the surf boat rowing in Australia. So you have all of these collective bits. And where have international competition has taken it with FISA in the last 20 years, really, in essence, was led by the French, who came up with a series of dimensions that all boats needed to conform to. And what it would be allow all of the, especially in France, all of the clubs that were facing out towards the sea, that were starting to look more and more inland and doing less and less racing on the sea. They wanted to get the guys continuing to racing on the sea. And in time, this was picked up. They were racing with the guys in the Channel Islands. And it was starting to move bigger and bigger. And I know there was a couple of boats ended up in Exmouth in the UK. And then FISA felt they did an experiment. And they thought, what if we ran a world championships? And there was a test world championships ran in the Channel Islands. It was deemed to be a success. So in Cannes, they ran the first world championships, world rowing coastal championships. And it was very well supported. As you can imagine, the French supported it enormously because they had the most number of boats. And it's just grown. And, you know, we had our, I think, you'd have to correct me, our 14th or 15th world championships in Hong Kong in the autumn last year. And it was epic. We were running in a commercial harbour with ferries running, and we were racing through those. We had one, the boats were passing within 10 metres of a open helicopter landing pad. You know, it was, if you look at the videos of what went on in Hong Kong, it is amazing and it looks exciting. The waters was incredibly technical. We had some really exciting chicanes, which just pulls out the real steering skill of the guys rowing those boats. And of course, last year, what we also had was the first ever world championships for beach sprint. But I know you specifically asked me a question beyond just the FISA boats, etc. And I will come back to those a little bit, but you know, there is more of it. There is that ocean rowing, and the ocean rowing side, a lot of people doing it as adventure. So they're going out and crossing an ocean in their own time and stuff. But there are two races that are running at the moment in ocean rowing. In ocean rowing. One, which is the Talisker Whiskey Challenge, which used to be every, started in the late 90s. And used to be every other year. It's running every year at the moment with around 30 plus boats. The number of people that are just inspired to challenge an ocean through rowing is crazy. To be honest, having done it, they really are crazy. And then every second year you have the Great Pacific Race, which goes from Monterey Bay through to Honolulu. You know, it doesn't quite have the numbers, but it certainly has the romance. And they were due to actually leave in the next couple of months, but the race has been cancelled due to coronavirus. We do know of a couple of crossings, ocean boats that have been turned away from islands, and they've had to progress, and they had a bit of a shocking time. There's a multinational Dutch boat that tried to come into Cape Verde, and they were told them they couldn't. So they said, well, hang on, we haven't got any water. Please, can we fill up with 400 litres of water so that we can row across the ocean to the Caribbean? So, you know, there are boats already out there that are struggling to in the coronavirus era. There were two amazing achievements that took place in ocean rowing just recently. And they're both in the Antarctic area. So there was a boat that rowed from the bottom of South America through across the Drake Straits. And I know there's loads of footage on the on one of the channels. I think it's you're going to have to dig in there, but it's across the Drake Passage. Fionn Paul, who is an epic ocean rower, he led that boat. They were actually escorted by a large scientific ship because it was so dangerous. But I think it took them 16 days and it looked very cold. That was pretty amazing. But the one which is the unbelievable achievement of the last 10-20 years is probably Fyodor, and I cannot pronounce his surname for the life of me, but he basically rowed the Southern Ocean. We went from New Zealand to Chile and lived to it. And he's over 70 years old. It's a Russian guy. The boat was built by the same, by Rannoch Adventure, who was built some of the fastest ocean rowing boats at the moment. There are other boat types out there. So it's just burgeoning. And the funniest thing is you've got really quick people, you've got really clever people, and you've got people that are going across just for life-changing experiences. So, and the funniest thing is Britain seems to have the most crazies of all.
I think
so. The rest of the world needs to catch up, and I think they are very, very well. But so that was my World Wind Tour, the latest of what's going on in ocean rowing. But I know you want to get back to a little bit more about the international racing at a world level.
Sure. Well, I think the English eccentric definitely appeals to the, as you say, the crazies. And there's nothing wrong with being crazy. So long as you're as safe as you possibly can be, I'd say, as they say in New Zealand, fill your boots, go for it. Now, one of the things that you personally got involved with in trying to popularize rowing and make it more accessible to more people and able to be held at more venues, obviously we know that 2000 meter straight lane racing is massively constrained by the ability to find a piece of land and a bit of water that can do this. Tell us what gave you the idea for the beach sprint race format.
Yeah, I think the beach sprint, I was very much aware that as the race evolved out of France, it often evolved where sailors wanted to race when there wasn't any wind. It used a lot. Our rules have come very much out of the world of sailing, especially of dinghy sailing. One of the challenges that you have with dinghy races is that the fleet go offshore, they race, 45 minutes later, they come back. The only people that are really excited are the officials, the marshals, and the sailors themselves. And how do you find it so that the audience can be part of that emotion, part of that excitement? And we did some experiments in, I think it was 2011, in Italy, in Bari, at the World Championships. And we asked everyone just to turn up for a fun beach sprint thing. Sign up on, it was the morning after the party, so everyone's really hungover. Sign up and go racing. And 8 o'clock in the morning we started. I think we were racing 9 and we finished at 12. We had more spectators on the beach for that than we had for the World Coastal Championships.
Wow.
And it's because people can see the whites of their eyes, they can see, they can relate to them. It's not just something, if a boat is 100 meters away from you, there's no connectivity between the audience. They don't feel like they're not living it with you. They're just seeing this thing appear through. And so it was, how do we create that empathy? And what was amazing was that the audience stayed till the last person came in and they clapped them in. And when the last person came up the beach, they were smiling and waving their hands about. You don't see the last rower come across the line waving their hands about being cheered on by the audience. Occasionally you have a few polite claps
Yeah. Your
regatta if you're that far behind. But most of the pictures, everyone looking and you're there. So it was a way of how do we get that audience closer? And the beach element was, so what we did in the World Coastal Championships, which is a 4-kilometer race, for the B final, 6-kilometer for the A final, we started introducing beach starts and beach finishes. Then it started to have a massive impact on the ability of the spectators participate. And as we went forward, we realized there was the emergence of the beach games. So you have Mediterranean beach games, African beach games, Asian beach games started to materialize. And we wanted to be part of that. We've got this great boat, and we've got this beach stuff we've written into our endurance races. Why not make it short, sharp and fun and cheaper to run? Because what we find is that we were finding quite a lot of people wanted to organize international events, but didn't have the money to pay for the 22 motorboats you need to put on. You have to cover the security and safety over a 3x3 kilometer course. Do you see what I mean? So you've got quite a lot of infrastructure. And what we wanted to do was to do it simple, fast, exciting and sharp. And so that we weren't flying boats in from all over the world. So for a World Coastal Championships, we need 48 boats. We could run a beach championships or we ran the Commonwealth one with 5 singles, 5 doubles and 5 quads.
Okay.
All just on the beach. The boats do all the work.
Yeah.
And it's literally as simple as you run down the beach, you jump in the boat, you row 250 meters out round a buoy and back again, jump out the boat, across the finish line. And what we did was we tried to do it in a way, and I've also designed it in such a way with the other guys on the Rowing for All Commission who take the responsibility for it. We designed it so that we So it wasn't just sprint. Because remember, the unique bit about rowing is we are extremely conditioned. We are incredibly fit, our endurances. So what we came up with, the principle of the last eight. So once you get to the last eight, quarterfinals, semifinals, finals will all happen one after the other. So if you're going to win the gold medal, you need to be able to string together three races in the space of about 25 minutes. Now, when I was doing a talk at the World Rowing Coaching Conference, we invited a exercise physiologist to come, and he reckoned it was equivalent to running around an 800 meter race or 600 meter race.
Wonderful.
Three of those in the space of 25 minutes. So you can see that unique endurance element is still there, even though it's a sprint. And also the bit that has become really apparent, and this will lead quite nicely into a discussion we'll have later on, of course, is the agility. So there's so many skill sets. So if I want to go 2000 meter rowing, I am an engine. And that engine is about efficiency of movement in pretty much one closed stroke. How much can I take that over, whether it's, 6 minutes or 7.5 minutes, just sort of mean over that distance? Can I pace it perfectly? All of those elements, have I adapted to the weather conditions that I'm in and the weather that it comes to be? But that's quite nominal. So it is really about energy and power output. Whereas once you get to the beach sprints and the coastal offshore champion, the offshore, the 6 kilometer races as well, you've got the ability to work the water. You've got the need to be agile. I mean, there's no set rate. Your boat's going to go faster. You have to move with it. In fact, the speed, when you start catching a wave, you can't give a call to take the rate up because that's too slow. You go with the feeling of the water. So you become a waterman or a woman of the water. And in the beach sprints, you're also trying to get in that boat. So you've got a lot of balance and the skill of getting in, and also the ability to come back in through the small surf break. We're not going in the surf waves that the surf rowers go in. We'll leave that expertise to them. So there's a lot more skill and agility in there, which means in many essences that the body type is, we'll have a wider range of body types to emerge. And at the moment we do. I mean, honestly, you look at the guys, who are winning in Hong Kong and Shenzhen, we had the world first ever world rowing beach sprint finals in Shenzhen in China the week before the World Coastal Championships and Adrian from Spain, who is pretty light, and he comes from the Trioma racing in the Basque Country, won both.
Wow.
Exquisite athlete. But he certainly isn't bulked out, or not even bulked out, but, long. He's not that huge bulk of a person that you would see on the river end. So I think there's an appeal in there that will, allow different body types. And I think the other bit that really features in here, sorry, I'm jumping in, is, of course, the geography of it all.
Yes.
You came right at the beginning to talk about this 2000 meter rowing lake or 1000 meter rowing lake. Very few countries have lakes where that fits. And there are so many countries, especially the island nations, that numerous island nations that row, that spend their entire time on the water, they understand the marine environment. This is made for them. It's great. And we were really lucky to have the African Beach Games in Cape Verde, and that was a real success. Seeing countries from all over Africa racing there was great to see. I'm going to show you a picture.
We like a good picture. While Gwyn's getting her picture, I met the winner of the Commonwealth singles, who was from Vanuatu, which is exactly what Gwyn just described, a small island nation in the middle of the Pacific. Show us, what have you got?
Oh, so you're talking about Rio from Vanuatu.
That's right.
I met him. So how do I get this? There we go. It's a picture which took place in the Maldives after the tsunami. This is a kid who's basically made, out of all the junk that was swept away, made a rowing boat.
Fantastic.
And he didn't make a canoe. He didn't make a raft. He made a rowing boat. And I think there's something that we owe those communities to help them to turn what is their tradition that they've lost because of the outboard engines, to help them turn it into sport. help them be part of the international world of sport and the world international world of rowing. So that was my inspiration in many ways.
Gwyn, that's a marvellous photograph. So, and a nice link into boat types. So we don't have to build our boats out of beach debris, but ocean water rowing boats are not the same as flat water rowing boats. Talk us through the different types of classes.
Yeah, so it's all sculling. It's all sculling, and basically we have the solo. We call it the solo, not the single, because it's a nod to the French, of course, who designed the sport. So we have the solo. We also have the double scull and the coxed quad scull. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is the double scull is pretty quick, and I would say it's the most loveliest of the three boats to row. It just has a beautiful flow out of it. It's very agile. And the requirements, in essence, there's two width measurements. There's a deep hull width measurement and a width overall measurement, which means that keeps them wide. Because mm-hmm. what we want to do is we don't want our boats to get skinnier and skinnier and mean that we can't go out in big waves. We want yes. to run these waves in, we want to run these races in really big conditions. And if they're too skinny, they'll keep falling, they'll keep capsizing. So nice, wide, stable boats. There's a length limit on the length, and there is a minimum weight. And the minimum weight has been specifically set to keep the costs, potential costs down of the boats. And we work very, very closely. We meet two times a year with the boat manufacturers monitoring these dimensions. And because what we don't want to do is to create a boat which becomes incredibly expensive to buy. Now, you can. There are beautiful boats out there. And I've got one of those sitting on my lawn, which is completely made of carbon, absolutely stiff and lovely and amazing. But when I go to race, I've got a load of weight in my cupboard that I have to put into the boat to make sure that I'm on an even footing as someone who's got a boat that's made out of cold cured fiberglass.
And
so,
you mentioned
my boat's double the price as this. So fool me, more fool me, spending the money on it. But I do like a bit of carbon.
You mentioned that the regattas are often organized so that the boats are pooled and they're provided for the athletes. So all you have to do is get to the regatta. Is that a good way to go?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the World Coastal Championships, so the endurance event, you can bring your own boat or you can hire the boats. And this, the World Championships, the next one coming up, which will now be in 2021, we've gone for an open market for hire. So I think we have five different boat manufacturers are the official boat suppliers, which you can mm-hmm. hire from, but you can still bring your own boat. So that's great. So it stops people having to drive massive trailers or containers around the world. In the beach sprints, it is a compulsory pool boat.
Okay.
So all we ask the teams to do there is to bring their own oars. So the boats are set up exactly the same.
Yes.
And the way to get your difference on gearing, if you're big or small, or wide, is on the oars. So right. we issue in the bulletin what the gearing will be on the pool boats, and the yeah. guys can set their own boats up at home for training on, and using their oars, then all they need to do is to either hire some oars locally or bring their oars with them on the plane.
That sounds like you've thought of a lot.
Absolutely. Well, the interesting thing to note is that for the beach sprint finals, it's one team per country. Mm-hmm. Okay? For the World Coastal Championships, there is actually no limit to the number of teams that a country can bring.
Uh-huh. So it's much more like triathlon in that respect.
Yeah. Yeah. And we are getting, the races are getting bigger and bigger. And we're at the point now where it didn't happen in Hong Kong, but I'm expecting it to happen at our next World Championships in Portugal, where we'll have a three rounds for the endurance version. And so therefore what we do is we ask the countries to rank their crews, and
right.
we take the top, and we will for Portugal, we'll be taking the top four guys straight to round two.
Yes.
Do you see what I mean? So it's a bit like the FA Cup. The big guns come in. Come in later, and everybody else is fighting to race the big guns. But we tried to do it in such a way that everybody races twice. You know, if you're going to race 4K, you race it twice, one each day. We try, you'd have to be pretty unlucky. I would have got the seed, or your national federation got your seeding wrong if you ended up racing three times. And it's getting incredibly competitive. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And some of the video footage is just stunning.
So that's a very good move towards how are you further going to broaden the sport? As you say, more people are doing it. It's getting more people have tried it, which is always a good way to start. And I'm guessing more clubs are acquiring these boats. So what happens next?
Yeah, so I think we've got a sort of a range of approaches, really. So one of the key bits for us is to encourage the breach sprint format to get into as many of these smaller regional events. And when I mean regional, I mean, you know, continental. So can we get into more beach sprint and more beach games events? Can we get into the Commonwealth Games with the beach sprint format, etc.? So there's a whole lot of getting into more multi-sport events. We are also not in the World Beach Games, which we're really, really keen to be part of. So there's elements like that. We're really keen to get into the Indian Island Games. So all of these elements of it. So that's one of the prongs. The other prong, of course, is to I'm working very closely at the moment with World Rowing and Sheila, who's the development director, to upskill the coaching in coastal around the world, so countries are aware of that. And Sheila's leading the work which is around the Youth Olympic Games, because the beach sprint is going to be the format used in Senegal in 2022 for the Youth Olympic Games, which is really exciting. So we're going to have loads of continental qualifications coming up to do that. We've got quite a high number of athletes in that event as well, so there's great opportunities for smaller countries to be in there. For the offshore championships, we're really keen to bring more and more countries in. We're listening to what the national federations are saying, and they're keen to get national teams in on that space. So how do we accommodate a lot more of the club teams that come, who make up the numbers, in essence, at the World Coastal Championships, and the very elite boats that are, you know, coming off sometimes straight off the back of world championships, or they themselves are specialising in coastal. So we've got those sort of developments. But really the biggie that really is coming over the hill for us, of course, is the loss of the 72 places that we're going to lose after Tokyo with the lightweights. And, you know, it's been really clear, the IOC have been really, really clear to us that that we, going forward, we won't have lightweights in the in our program after Tokyo, and we've worked very, very hard to try and keep that in, and it's really clear that that's just not a viable position. So one of the options that we're looking at the Extraordinary Congress coming up will be, can we potentially put forward the discipline of coastal for the Olympics? Right. And we have devised, and the team at FISA have been working really closely with the staff at the IOC to design something that the IOC would be really interested, that would add value, that wouldn't have add costs, but would add value, that's meaningful for us as a community, and that would allow the lightweight type of body type would be able to be much more competitive in the coastal side.
I see the connection now.
Yeah, it's a direct link. So, you know, if you think about, if you look at the body types, so the guys that are winning and the guys that are very, very agile, they tend to be smaller. In the women's side, there's a real range. But with the guys, they tend not to be the really big guys. What's quite interesting, I hear anecdotally that China have moved majority of their lightweight program into coastal already. And I know that their team that they took to Shenzhen to the World Beach Finals, there was an exquisite team, really well drilled, highly conditioned. In fact, their coxswain of the men's quad, he was selected out of 200 based on his running speed.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, but there's still so much more to emerge from the sport. I see the guys running. I mean, it's really creative at the moment. You know, that we have a rule where your team comes with boat handlers. So yeah, they're the people that are helping you get in the boat, holding the boat, preparing the boat, moving the boat. I mean, it's incredibly challenging if you are a team manager or a boat handler. You ain't going to just sit around and polish the boat, jump on your bike and cycle. You know, you've got something to do. And you know, that skill of how they can help every little second, because once you drop off the back of the same wave, so once you're 3 seconds behind, if you think about the wave periods,
yes,
it's really hard to get over the wave to get. So to but you up. Could be, if you're within 3 seconds as you come past the last buoy, you could, you've got a hope of getting back. And so everything plays, you know, and it's multifaceted. And you know, the bit that I've always said is that it's chaotic. It's, you know, the favourites won't win. So I'll give you a classic example. So we had Rio for Vanuatu. He was the Commonwealth champion. We were expecting him to come into the top four at the in Shenzhen. And he made a mistake in the time trial, which meant the time trial seed them into the next rounds. Yeah. And at the same time, there was an issue of the Chinese single sculler made a mistake. They met each other in the repertoire. They put out one of the favourites.
So
what it does is it allows, if you make a mistake anywhere, you know, it changes. Everything can change. So it's a bit like surfing. So I've been watching surfing a lot because one of the sports that we need to work very closely with is surfing. And, you know, the world champion can go out in the quarterfinals. The world champion can go in the first 32. You know, if they don't have a wave that they, and they don't have priority on the best wave that's coming in, you know, they've only got 24 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever the heat exists of, they're out. And that immediately opens up the field. And so as a spectator, it's great. As somebody who's trained for 10 years of her life,
yeah,
maybe a little bit harder, but we can work with the psychologist to get that one in. But it's the nature of the sport in many ways. So yeah, exciting, different, chaotic, high amount of jeopardy, you know.
Tell us what your ideal format would be for a post-Tokyo Olympic sea rowing event.
Yeah, so the way we've explained it, so the stuff that we've put forward to the proposal, which will go to Congress and then hopefully onto the IOC for the IOC to make the decision, is we're putting coastal first forward. Mm-hmm. So coastal as the discipline, so these fat boats. What we aren't doing is specifying whether it would be the endurance or whether it be the sprint.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're saying we're putting this discipline, and what we are prepared to do is, depending on the nature of where the Olympic venue is, we can adapt the sport to that. So, right. Do you see what I mean? So if it is, you know, a venue which would be a harbour-based venue without any beaches, it may be the best one to do the endurance format. And so actually from Olympics to Olympics, that might even change. You know, I know that there's a beautiful beach that would work really well in the sailing venue in Marseille, but it might not be that venue. Do you see what I mean? You know, we can't count our chickens too early. We've got a lot to go through. And you know, one of the big sad things for us actually was the fact that the situation we're in with coronavirus at the moment is that the Olympics being delayed, that decision will take place. We don't know when the decision will be taken, but we know that it's highly likely to take place after the Olympics. So yes. Whereas we're expecting the decision to be made this year in December, so we would have our Congress prior to that. We would make the decision on what we were putting forward, then the IOC would make their decision. That's all been put back by at least 12 months. Because to analyse all of the events and the sports in the Olympics, they need all the data, the spectator data, the revenue data, and all of those elements, because that's how they do a very detailed analysis after every Games. So it's all to play for. I mean, you know, coastal world rowing, coastal, the endurance and the beach sprints are incredibly exciting. Now, whether they get into the games or not, I don't think it matters. It doesn't matter for the people who are currently doing the sport. But I think if it does go into the games, you know, it will change the personality, like it's changing the personality of surfing and climbing. But to be honest, I think it's robust enough that it will always keep its roots back in the tradition and the heritage of the fishing, the pilot boats, yeah, and the, you know, all of, and the lighter boats that worked on the seas, where our heritage comes from.
Yeah, I heard a whisper from someone who lives in Long Beach, California, that the IOC had been out measuring their waterway. So obviously they have ambition for, is it 2024?
So that would be 2028, wouldn't it?
28 is America, yeah. So it could be interesting.
So I've looked at, there's a particularly good bit up where the open water swimming or triathlon up at the top there. So yeah, there's a bit of beach, but it doesn't have to be beach, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's the work that the way it was televised in Hong Kong, using really long lenses to flatten the race, using the the drones. I mean, yeah. Shenzhen, Hong Kong, we were in the home of DJI, you know. We had three drones up following the races, and those shots from above and then the shots from behind that can go with the boat, it's just phenomenal. You know, we almost get to the point where, you know, we can take the spectators to sitting on the sterns of the boats.
They do that with one of the racing sailing formats. There's inland, close to land, short sprint racing format, which is on a double-hulled boat, and I forget what it's called. But you have to take a guest who sits, and you have a crew of five and one guest. And so it's a really interesting format. So someone is sitting there holding on for grim death with nothing to do but to stay with the boat.
It's a bit like the Great River Race. You have to have a passenger in the Great River Race. It's usually a nine-year-old strapped to a bit of boat somewhere. Bless them.
Now, if people want to find out more or get involved or start to join the community, where should they go to look, Gwyn?
Yeah, I think in countries where it's already established, so, you're talking about France and Italy and Greece and Spain and Portugal, you know, and Great Britain, Sweden's very, you know, very fond, Denmark, you know, countries where it's established, you can go to a club. You can see, mm-hmm. go on your National Federation website, look down, go to the club. But I think if you're in a country that hasn't got the coastal boats in, what you really need to do, I think, is a mixture of things. I'd probably head to the World Rowing Coastal Facebook page, because that's where a lot of those events are. I fundamentally believe, you know, it's quite difficult choosing a boat. So I would get involved in the sport before you start buying a boat. Now, I know that sounds absolutely crazy, but you can rock up to an event and hire a boat at the event. You know, for mm-hmm. example, so I would choose ones where it's not too rough and not too technical, mm-hmm. of course, but probably the most exciting one is you can come to the most long-standing international rowing event that is out there is the Monaco Prince Albert II Challenge. And yes, they've just moved their date to the first week in December. They run it every year. It's really easy to get to. You just fly down to Nice, get on the bus and go to Monaco. And it's on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And they're so hospitable. So that's a great way of doing it. There's also an event held in Helsingborg each year in Sweden. And then quite a few national championships, the Italian national championships, the British national championships, not sure the French, but they're open. Mm-hmm. So they have international representatives who can come to their national championships. So there's quite a few races out there. So go onto the Facebook page. You can always ask questions through of the guys, and they'll usually send them on to me and the lot on my committee. We'll try mm-hmm. and answer them. But there's some really good stuff. I noticed you've got that up on the site here. Got bled on there, haven't we? Oh,
well. That's right. So the Facebook page is facebook.com/worldrowingcoastal. And I'm just showing it for those watching on the video. There's lots of really good videos that have been uploaded, and also just all sorts of different bits of information. Lots of videos have been put up from, so here we go, the 2019 Rowing Coastal Championships. You can see a lot of the excitement that Gwyn was talking about earlier on their video.
Excellent. Brilliant. And, you know, we want more people to be part of it. You know, it's, you know, if we could go over 1,000 competitors in Portugal next year, that would be amazing. I mean, Lisbon is a beautiful city, absolutely beautiful city. The Portuguese Federation, who are running the event, really, really invested a lot of time into it, the people into it. They're working full time on it. The beach is beautiful in Osiris. There is a restaurant straight onto it. We will have a 18 boat mass beach start. We've got a wonderful surf beach that we're going to be racing just behind it. So we should get some good swells, which these boats love green swell. And then we've got, which is a picturesque Portuguese fort, and we will literally be going within a stone's throw of that. So, you know, you'll have crashing waves hitting the rocks and you'll be skinning around the edge of the fort. It's an epic course. And, you know, I'm sure the party will be just as good as well.
What's the date for that?
So I don't think we've actually finalised the date. We're just waiting on the calendar from World Rowing to come out, just juggling everything in 2021 with the Olympics now going in. But it's likely to be in October 2021.
Great. So we have a few messages from people who are watching. Betsy, who says hi to you, Gwyn.
Hi.
And a message here from Coastal Rowing USA. I don't know who Charlotte is. Di Carter, who's enjoying you being here.
Well, she lives in Henley. I'm sure if I shout louder, I might get her.
And Peter Egby says hello.
Oh, brilliant. Great.
To you. So and I've a few
got
people.
I've got some fans there. How cool is that?
You have some total fans. I have a fan too, which is Jackie. Hello. And Steve Ellis has tagged his friend Michel Cabel in the hope, obviously, that he would be watching too. And we have got some more people watching live. So thank you, everybody who's been watching. Thank you to Gwyn Batten for a great insight and a gallop around everything that's happening on sea rowing, which is brilliant. And your enthusiasm and energy does you enormous credit. But what I'm so impressed with is how fast you've moved and how far you've come in a relatively short period of time. And total hats off for ticking all of the inclusion boxes and a recognition that the accessibility factor of ocean rowing is really high. And I personally am seeing a lot of it in the sorts of online places where I go for rowing discussion, people sharing photographs, people joining existing rowing chat groups who are ocean, using ocean type boats rather than fine boats, and how brilliant this is. Let's not discriminate.
I fundamentally believe it's a community of people, and what you'll find is until they try it, once they try it, they're completely hooked, and they're the guys that are going out and championing. I mean, I think I picked up the mantle when I came in as the council member responsible for this, but actually I'm standing on the shoulders of some really innovative and forward thinking people that design the sport. So it's great. It's a real privilege to be part of it. And, you know, you're never going to please anyone as being part of the International Federation. But the guys that are going out there and winning, and they do it with so much grace, they do it with so much skill. It's just compelling. It's compelling to watch. It's compelling to do.
Gwyn, it's been a delight yet again having you on the show. Thank you so much. Thank you to all of the people who've been watching and listening. Hello quickly to Ruth Rudkin, who's been joining us. And Coastal Sculler says, great show, thank you. And Coastal Rowing USA say they wish you had come to row their race last November, Gwyn. So maybe there's an invitation for the future.
Send me an email. I'll come.
So to everybody who's joined us online, please go hang out with Gwyn and the coastal folks on the World Rowing Coastal page. To those of you who are listening live, thank you for getting involved and sending us your remarks and questions. It's great fun. And if you have some ideas of people who might like to come and join us on Rowing Chat, or possibly even host your own show on the network, get in touch with me. The website is rowing.chat. And till next time, goodbye.